From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. A United States senator from Michigan and a representative from Arizona want an investigation into why federal dollars, typically used to prevent wildfires, were given to the state of Alaska to work on the roadless rule. Today, Senator Debbie Stabenow and Representative Raul Grijalva sent a request to the U.S. Department of Agriculture Inspector General asking for more transparency into how the federal grant was awarded and how the state is spending the money. In September, records requests obtained by Alaska's Energy Desk showed the USEA gave the Alaska Division of Forestry $2 million. That money was used for the state to act as a cooperating agency in the rulemaking process regarding how the roadless rule should apply to the Tongass National Forest. But the state also paid a timber industry group more than $200,000 from those funds to provide additional input. Other cooperating agencies, such as tribal governments, didn't receive any money. Currently, the Trump administration is seeking a rollback of the roadless rule in the Tongass, which could increase access to logging. Senator Stabenow, a ranking member of the U.S. Senate Committee on Agriculture, Nutrition, and Forestry, is concerned about climate change and said in the letter that the Tongass is essential to addressing the climate crisis. A group seeking changes to Alaska's oil tax credit system has filed a lawsuit against state officials over language describing its initiative. KTVA reported that Vote Yes for Alaska's Fair Share filed a complaint in Anchorage Superior Court against Republican Lieutenant Governor Kevin Meyer and the State Division of Elections. The group's members say the state is not receiving an equitable share of oil proceeds largely because of a per-barrel deduction for oil companies it believes is overly generous, while the state has a large budget deficit. The complaint says Meyer did not properly summarize the group's ballot initiative, known as the Fair Share Act, when preparing a ballot title and proposition for the measure. The complaint says the state would not discuss the group's suggested corrections. Bruce Tangeman is resigning as commissioner of the Alaska Department of Revenue. In an opinion article published in the Anchorage Daily News website on Friday, Tangeman wrote that he wants Governor Mike Dunleavy to, quote, have someone who is 100% aligned with his vision. He also wrote that any potential new taxes would support what he called an unsustainable budget, as well as permanent fund dividends. The resignation comes a month before Dunleavy must submit his next budget proposal. Dunleavy said in a statement that he, quote, regrettably received Tangeman's letter of resignation. Dunleavy thanked Tangeman in the statement, saying his leadership and oversight of the Department of Revenue enabled many lasting changes and efficiencies. His character and strong work ethic have been a valuable asset to his team. The governor's office said Tangeman will oversee the rollout of the upcoming fall revenue forecast and the budget and will continue in his role until a replacement is found. Tangeman previously served as policy director for the Senate Majority, vice president and chief financial officer of the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation, and deputy revenue commissioner. A Republican who owns his own hunting and fishing guiding business has been appointed to the Alaska legislature. Governor Mike Dunleavy's office announced late Sunday night that Melvin Gillis has been selected to replace Josh Rivak to an open seat for the Anchorage area in the House of Representatives. Rivak was confirmed to the Senate seat that was held by Republican Chris Birch, who died in August. House Republicans will have to approve Gillis's appointment. According to the governor's office, Gillis has lived in Alaska for 55 years and helped rebuild village structures following the 1964 Alaska earthquake. He's owned his guiding business since 1970. When you think of extremely dry conditions, California wildfires probably come to mind. But drought looks very different in a temperate rainforest. Southeast Alaska has gotten enough precipitation in the last few years to flood some parts of the country, but it's not nearly enough to sustain a way of life dependent on rain. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has the story of one community trying to adapt.
Metlakatla is on the Annette Island Reserve, just a short ferry ride from Ketchikan. There's a common saying here. The precipitation that feeds Metlakatla's lakes is some of the best-tasting drinking water in the world. In fact, a water bottling company briefly opened up here. Gavin Hudson, who serves on Metlakatla's Tribal Council, says the idea of having an abundance of water is an important part of the culture.
And the Tsimshian have always been people of the water, people of the salmon.
Hudson says locals have been noting dry conditions and the changes it's brought for a while. Low salmon returns in streams typically cooled by rain. The blueberry bushes haven't been as plump or abundant. And a big difference, grown-ups haven't been able to fall back on a familiar summer joke they would say with a wink.
The usual thing that you would hear is, Mom, Dad, can I go swimming down on the beach? And their response would be, is there still snow on the mountain?
The catch, he says, there used to almost always be snow on top of the mountain all the way through July.
Now we don't say that. Even if we do get some snow, it's not deep. It's not snowpack, it's just the light dusting. That's unusual.
Snowmelt helps feed Metlakatla's lakes depending on the season. It's like money in the bank. But recently, there's been more climate variability, less snow and rain. Hudson says all of this has been making the community feel uneasy.
I think most of our people who just want to provide for their families, I think those folks have just another thing to worry about. Higher light bills, oceans that are changing, forests that are changing.
The high light bills are because Metlakatla is primarily powered by hydropower, which the drought has taken a toll on. It's Carl Gobb's responsibility to try to keep those lights on.
Voila, I put this building together.
He's worked at Metlakatla Power and Light for more than 30 years. Generating enough hydroelectricity for a town of around 1,500 is a big part of his daily life. So much, he sometimes answers to a different name.
Mr. Power. I mean, I have friends out there that call me out when we play basketball. You know, you're a powerhouse, okay, whatever.
But Gobb has seen a combination of events unfold that has made supplying enough power to his community extremely difficult. He says a few decades ago, times were different. Businesses like a local sawmill paid a premium to tap into the microgrid. In years with low precipitation, that helped the electric company buy enough diesel to burn to keep the lights on. But the sawmill has long since closed. A local fish packing plant recently shut its doors too. In the last few years, the Metlakatla Indian community is having to figure out how to adjust to a new identity. An island surrounded by water and in the middle of a severe drought.
I just pray that it never happens like this again.
Janelle Winter noticed a dramatic shift after hiking up a mountain to scope out Metlakatla's main reservoirs.
When you could see all three of those dams and you could literally walk across that channel on the old 27 dam, you're like, this is not a normal condition, and you probably should never be able to do that.
You shouldn't be able to do that, she says, because you would be completely soaked. Winter's work previously focused on invasive species. But around 2015, her job title changed. She became Metlakatla's Climate and Energy Grant Coordinator. She says, at first, she struggled with how to describe the unusually dry conditions. It just felt
wrong that you could be in a temperate rainforest and be in a drought.
Still, Winter says she knew the community needed to scale back its energy use to build its reservoirs back up. To do that, Metlakatla would have to navigate a different relationship with water. For a time, that's meant burning diesel for the traditionally hydro community. Metlakatla received funding from the Bureau of Indian Affairs for a one-time purchase of bulk fuel, which can be as high as $4 a gallon. Winter says that's been a big help restoring the levels of the lakes. And a phone call from the National Weather Service last year finally gave her a way to put the experience into words. They told her, yes, you are officially in a severe drought, and so are other communities in Southeast Alaska.
Really helped us to define and take even more ownership of what was going on. That this was something that we needed to learn how to deal with now so that when we met the challenge again in the future, we would already know how to do it.
But the Metlakatla Indian community has already taken steps to prepare. Winter has primed students on the drought, even when no one was calling it that. She's talked to elementary and middle school classes. And Metlakatla has cut its water use in half since 2016. But the community isn't out of the woods yet. One of its newest diesel generators broke last year, resulting in an emergency declaration. If another extremely dry spell comes along, the town will be powered by a generator that's over 30 years old. As for today, though, the community is back on hydro.
This is Walden Point Road.
On a final stop, Winter points to a landmark waterfall cascading down the mountain. It's likely spillover from one of the main reservoirs. During the worst parts of the drought, this waterfall was dry. The flow should be a happy sight, but Winter says it's more complicated than that.
I used to just see it as this beautiful thing, and now wish that we could capture that water somehow.
Metlakatla is in the process of figuring out how it can raise the levels of the reservoir to hold more precipitation on the good days. This system, constructed with the understanding there'd always be enough water, was built for a different time. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Metlakatla.
Gustavus residents will be able to have their blood tested to detect possible chemical contamination. The Juneau Empire reported last week that samples will be taken this week in Gustavus. Officials say the samples will be sent to Indiana University Bloomington to be analyzed for perfluoroalkyl and polyfluoroalkyl substances, collectively known as PFAS. Gustavus PFAS Action Coalition Chair Kelly McLaughlin says she hopes for at least 40 participants in the collection and testing, which will be free to residents. The EPA says the man-made chemicals are persistent in the environment. Studies have found links between the contaminants and various illnesses. Officials say the chemicals have been detected in Gustavus water supplies, and the state has distributed drinking water to residents whose water tested above a specific threshold. Seven communities in southeast Alaska had their ferry service slashed earlier this month. Alaska Marine Highway System has restored service to some of the affected communities. The ferry Taslina will be brought back online to make up for previously canceled sailings. Earlier this month, the Marine Highway System pulled two ferries, the Aurora and the Leconte, out of service. Both ships need extensive repairs. This severely reduced winter ferry trips to Haines, Skagway, and Hoonah. The communities of Tenneke, Pelican, Gustavus, and Angoon lost winter ferry service altogether. According to Marine Highway System spokesperson Sam Dapsovich, the Department of Transportation has been looking for ways to increase service to the affected communities since then.
Alaska Marine Highway System decided to explore other alternatives, and I know that there was quite a bit of discussion and collaboration with the unions so that we could come up with a way to make it happen.
The Taslina was scheduled to have new side doors installed this winter, but the contract for that work was not finalized. Instead, the ship will provide service between Juneau and Haines, Skagway, Hoonah, and Gustavus. And Anchorage residents experienced both a record high temperature and a record amount of snowfall in the same day recently. Anchorage Daily News reported that Anchorage saw snowfall of more than a foot on Saturday after tying a temperature record set in 1967. And finally, we have a correction to several stories we've aired since October 31st that mention the Alaska Marine Highway System ferry Leconte. The stories have understated the size of the gap between what the system has budgeted and what it estimates it needs to overhaul the Leconte. State officials say they're $4 million short, not $2.8 million. That is it for the KTOO News Update for Monday, November 18th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.